The following audio is from Solid Rock Community Church. More information about Solid Rock Community Church is available at www.solidrockcommunitychurch.com.
Really close friends ever since, and so it's always good for me to be able to come home. I have family that still lives in the area, Federal Way and Renton, and my brother lives up in North Burlington. Yes, give it up for Burlington. Yes, all right. So anyway, it's always good to come back, and you know, Mac and I were talking a few months ago about me coming, and you know, I was thinking last night as I was driving, Nancy and I had pulled into town on our, you know, way to speak, but we got in last night, and we're driving on 405, and we were passing 167 on our way to the mall. We were going to go grab something to eat, and I know there's a lot of restaurants around there, so we were on our way, and as we were going, I said, honey, now this area right here where we were passing, I said, and I can't remember if it was this side or this side of the street, but my grandparents lived here. And I remember that house because there was a day when my dad took me to Little League football practice. And he took me to practice, he dropped me off, and he never came back. Never. I waited in the park. Pretty soon, it was just me and a couple of other guys in the park, and they asked, because they were riding together, hey, do you need a ride home? I said, no, my dad will come. Now, we hadn't lived in Washington very long. It was the first year we lived here, so everything was new to me. And anyway, so I waited and waited and waited, and finally realized, you know, he's not coming back. And so I walked down from Talbot Hill down to Renton Village, if you know where that is. And so was able to go to a payphone, found a payphone, called the operator. The operator got a hold of my grandparents. My grandparents were able to come and get me and took me. And I said, honey, and that's the house. You know, it's interesting. All of us in this room have stories like that. Maybe not quite like that, but we have stories that bring up memories of painful experiences, disappointments. In fact, I believe on your notes, it says, everyone has a story, and our stories are filled with joy, happiness, surprise, disappointment, failure, and pain. We get both sides of the coin. We just don't get one. We get both sides. And that was that story on that night, and that's what I remembered about driving that moment. I told that story years ago to my wife, but I was able to say, hey, this is that area. In fact, I don't even think her house is there anymore, but I said this over here somewhere was the house that I was taken to, and that's when I felt safe again. And so we all do. We all have those stories in our lives of, like I said, you know, joy, you know, those moments where we were so excited. Maybe we hit our first home run, we scored our first touchdown, or whatever that was. Happiness. We think of those moments when we were doing something either alone with family or friends, and we were just so happy. I remember the first time I ever went to Disneyland. I was living in Long Beach, California at the time with my family, and it was Boy Scout and Cub Scout Day. Yes? And so we got to go in before the park opened to the general public, and I just remember being so happy and just running around and seeing this place for the first time in my life. It was such a great day. I remember it to this day as being one of the happiest days of my life. And then there's surprise, those moments that completely surprise us, things that we didn't expect, weren't planning on. Somebody did something else for us, and it just surprised us, and again, brought those feelings maybe of joy or happiness. But then that other side is disappointment, whether it's disappointment in ourselves or it's disappointment from the people that we know and love and trust. But we have those moments where, you know, we've been disappointed, those moments when we have felt failure, where it was me and I didn't measure up. Part of my story is growing up with an alcoholic, very abusive father. Some of you know that, some of you don't. And being abused and abandoned and left in every way, every form of abuse took place in our home. And our home was a scary place whenever my dad was there. And we didn't like it, but that's what we grew up in. And so we were disappointed by that whole thing in our home. And the feeling of failure, like how a boy my age at the time, 10, asking himself, how does a dad forget his son? How does that happen? You know, at 10 years old, we shouldn't have to wrestle with those kinds of questions, but people do, and even younger than that. And so there's that disappointment. I grew up with learning disabilities, and in school I was told I was stupid and dumb and had a bad attitude and didn't want to learn, and that was my problem, and don't expect much from your life. And so those failures that we feel, they're real, and we carry them with us, and they're part of our story, they're part of our journey. And then there's just the pain, there's the emotional pain, there's the spiritual pain, there's the physical pain, there's all of this pain that we feel that's absolutely real. We have both sides of the coin. I mean, life was not easy growing up, but life was still good. I still had moments of that other side. And, you know, one of the things that I was talking with Pastor Dave about, was speaking here, was just, you know, Dave knows my story, is maybe talking about overcoming some of those things in our lives that produce that pain and those scars. And that's what I want to focus on a little bit here this morning. The title of my talk is Own It: Three Things We Must Do to Overcome Life's Disappointments, Failures, and Pain. And I really believe there's some things that we can do. Now, I didn't learn this until later in life, but I'm so glad that I did, because it really was a defining moment for me. It was a defining moment. And let me start off by reading this verse from Romans 12. It says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good, acceptable, and perfect." And I just love that verse. And I think, how many of you know that verse? I mean, that's not new to you. You've heard it. How many of you have memorized it? Isn't that a great verse? It's so true. There's so many things that I have learned, and one of the things I like to say is, you know, there's so much information in the Bible that is designed for application, and when we apply it, it actually transforms our lives. And that's really the goal, is that the information is where it begins, but the transformation is where it takes us, and it's where we experience. And I look at this, and I really believe this was one of the things that really became true to me years after I was an adult, years after I was pastoring. This became true to me at another level, and I'm so grateful. And so how many of you, just real quick before I go on, how many of you made your goals for the year 2017? Before January 1st. Anyone sit down and make some goals, personal, professional, and all that kind of stuff? Yeah, a lot of us do, right? And by the way, side note, we're halfway through the year. How you doing? Are you on track? All right, so just, all right, enough of that. But we all do. So how many of you, when you sat down and you decided to write out your goals, you also put in there the failures, setbacks, and disappointments that you were going to experience? Were those in that list? Not so much, right? Because setting goals is a happy place, right? Man, we think about what our life can be, what we want it to be, where we can grow and be stretched, and the things that we can accomplish. And usually it's very motivational, and we're excited, and we're ready to face our year or our day or whatever. But the truth is, those setbacks, those failures, those disappointments that we're all going to experience are going to happen. They're going to happen. And here's what I've learned, is the way that we respond to those is absolutely critical to whether or not we're able to really overcome, learn, grow, and move forward regardless. Regardless. I've learned that, and we hear this term a lot, especially from athletes, but I really believe it's our mindset. And this is one of the things Paul was talking about in Romans, that we have to renew our mind. So we're all on the same page. Mindset is simply this. Mindset is what we believe, right? It's what we believe about a number of things. So there isn't one mindset. There's a lot of mindsets. In fact, Nick Saban happens to be one of my favorite football coaches, and he has a book out that I've been reading. And in it, he talks about the mindset for preparation, the mindset for the game, the mindset for the play. I mean, he just breaks it down to the mindset. How do you approach each moment? How do you approach each section, whether it's a game or your life? And so mindset is what we believe. What is it that we truly believe? Because whatever we believe is going to determine the decisions that we make. And the decisions that we make are going to determine the actions that we take. And the actions that we take will ultimately equal the results that we get in life. Every area of our life, our spiritual life, our relational life, our family life, our financial life, our career, every area of our lives. So this mindset is so important. And I think, go back to the Seahawks, because I'm a big Seahawk fan, even though I live in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And I remember the year that the Seahawks were playing the Falcons in the playoffs, and we lost. Remember, how many of you remember that game? How many of you don't want to remember that game? So remember, the Falcons set up for, somebody set up for a kick. It was either us or them, and Pete Carroll called the timeout, and we made that one, but it didn't count. And then we kicked it again in real time, and we missed it, and it didn't count. And so the game was over, and we lost. And so, but it was after that game that Russell Wilson, in an interview, said, you know, I really believe that we can win the Super Bowl. I think we have the talent. I think we have the leadership. I think we have the work ethic. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the Super Bowl, not as a fan, but as in preparation. I'm going to prepare for next year's Super Bowl. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to take in the environment, not from a fan's perspective, but from a perspective of what does all this distraction do to your mental preparation? What does a long pregame, how does that affect you? What does a long halftime do to the momentum of the game, and how do you make adjustments? I mean, he really went to study the environment because he really believed that they had the talent to be there. And of course, the next year they went, and they were Super Bowl champions. Come on, you can get excited. That is a great example of what mindset does, right? It's their mindset. So we go in and so, you know, beliefs, decisions, actions, results. And this is why Paul said it's so important for us not to conform to the pattern of this world, but to be transformed by the renewing of our mind. We have to have a different belief system. We've got to start making different decisions, taking different actions if we want a different result. We have to do that. And so, going back to this, mindset is, there's two mindsets. And the first one I want to talk about is the mindset of a victim. The victim is somebody that believes that life's been unfair, unjustly bad towards them, and that people have done them wrong. And I get that. For years, I lived with a victim's mindset. I get that. And I think, you know, as I look back, it's the way that I kind of responded to my life circumstances. I'm not making an excuse. I'm just telling you, as I reflect, I think that's where it came from. But I realized that. I didn't realize it, though, until I was sitting in a training in Austin, Texas, for a job I was in. I was leading a real estate company, and the trainer there was talking about this whole idea of mindset, and he was talking about the difference between, you know, the two mindsets, one being the victim. And I realized right then and there that, you know what, I've been a victim. I've had a victim's mindset. And I'm so thankful for that moment, because in that moment I decided I don't ever want to be a victim again. And so I want to dive into, I'm going to talk a little bit more about what that means and what that looks like. And so one of the things I'm not doing is I'm not being... I want to be sensitive to those people who have been victimized, because that does happen. That happened in our home. I want to be very sensitive to that. But that's not what I'm talking about. And hopefully that will come out here in just a minute. But, you know, when God took Israel out of Egypt and put them into the wilderness, and they were wandering, they were headed to a land that would flow with milk and honey. It was the promised land. It was a great thing that God was going to bring them into. They got up close to it, and Moses picked 12 people, one person from each tribe, to go into the land, spy it out. And a couple of things that he said is, number one, find out if they're weak or strong people, right? Find out if their cities are fortified or not. So really take in what the challenges are where we're going. So take note. So I want to read that here to set this up. So after, this is Numbers 13, after exploring the land for 40 days, the men returned to Moses, Aaron, and the whole community of Israel at Kadesh in the wilderness of Paran. They reported to the whole community that had seen and showed them the fruit that they had taken from the Lord. This was their report to Moses. We must enter the land that you sent us to explore. And it is indeed a bountiful country, a land flowing with milk and honey. Here is the kind of fruit that it produces, because they brought some back, grapes, pomegranates, you know. So they said, look at this. You know, it is exactly what we heard about. Check this out. Look at this. But the people living there are powerful, and their towns are large and fortified. We even saw giants, the descendants of Anak. The Amalekites live in the Negev, and the Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites live in the hill country. The Canaanites live along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea and along the Jordan Valley. But Caleb tried to quiet the people as he stood before Moses, and he said, "Let us go out at once and take the land," he said. "We can certainly conquer it." But the other men who had explored the land with him disagreed. Now listen to this. "We can't go up against them. They are stronger than we are." So they spread this bad report about the land among the Israelites. "The land we traveled through and explored will devour anyone who goes to live there. All the people we saw were huge. We even saw giants. They were there, the descendants of Anak. Next to them, we felt like grasshoppers." And that's what they thought, too. That was their thought. That was their mindset. Their mindset is, man, this is too big for us. This is too much for us. They're bigger. They're stronger. They're fortified. There's a lot of them. And their mindset was such that we cannot do this. And it's already affecting their decisions and actions. And their actions was, we're not going in. We can't do that. There's just no way. Well, then it goes on into Numbers. It says, "The whole community began weeping aloud, and they cried all night. Their voices rose in a great chorus of protest against Moses and Aaron. If only we had died in Egypt, or even there in the wilderness," they complained. "Why is it that the Lord's taking us to this country only to have us die in battle? Our wives and our little ones will be carried off as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt?" Then they plotted amongst themselves, "Let us choose a new leader and let's go back." Now, here's what we do. We read that story, and I don't know about you, but for years I've read that story and thought, you bad people, what's the deal with you? What's the matter with you people, right? And that's easy to do, unless this happens to be me or you. Right? And so here's what happens, and I want to talk about what happens when someone goes into this victim's mindset, because it happens every day, and it can happen to anybody, and even though I know this, it can happen to me. And that's why I want to make us aware of it, so we can move on beyond the pain, the disappointments, and the failures that we've all experienced. Number one is this is what we listen for. People begin to make excuses. That's the very first thing. "Well, I didn't know. I wasn't told. I wasn't trained. The traffic was bad. My computer didn't work," right? We start making excuses for why we are not doing what we said we were going to do or what's expected of us to do. We start making excuses. This is one of the very first steps. And the reason why I say this is because I want to encourage you to listen not only to your own thoughts and words, but also to the thoughts, well, not thoughts, but the words to the people around you. Because this is what I've realized. When we go into a victim's mindset, we are stuck. So if it's your relationships, if it's your spiritual life, it's your relational life, if it's your financial life, if it's your career, the moment we go down this road, we are stuck. In fact, I just had a coffee with a guy on Thursday. I'd never met him, but he lives in our community. He reached out to me and is thinking about going through some coaching. And so I met with him, and he started talking about where he was at and making some excuses and just following this pattern. And eventually he said, "You know what, Terry, I'm stuck. I don't know what to do, and I don't like this feeling." So the first one is making excuses. The next one is blame. We blame people, right? We blame people. It's somebody else's fault. This is, hey, it's my church, you know, it's what they did. It's my pastor. Well, it's my pastor. It's not really that funny, but, right, Mac? It's my boss, right? It's my spouse. You know, my boss didn't tell me. My boss doesn't respect me. My boss doesn't encourage me, right? It's my spouse, you know, she doesn't understand me, or he doesn't, you know, respect me, or whatever. It's my kids. It's my parents. It's my neighbor's fault. It's the guy in the other land. It's the server, right? It's someone or something else's fault. It's the reason that we are giving for not moving forward. I remember listening to an interview with Jason Gesser, quarterback for WSU. And he was talking about a game that WSU had lost. And the interviewer asked him something about what was it like in the locker room? Was there a lot of finger pointing and stuff like that? And this is what he said: no, we don't finger point. The only thing we focus on is what I did or didn't do. It's the only thing we focus on. And I thought, you know, that is such a great example. That's such a great leadership quality. Not blaming the line, not blaming the play calls, but taking responsibility. So so blaming. And this happens. And we blame people, and we blame the people around us. We blame our bosses and different people that are causing us pain or making it feel like we can't move forward in life. So we make excuses, we blame. The next one is we complain. How many of you ever, you hear people, you know people, whether it's work or in your home or your neighbor, somebody, and they complain. It's like what they do like all the time. It's they have the ability to find out what's wrong in any and every situation, right? You know those people? Okay. So, you know, when we hear people complaining, we know they're in their victim mindset and they're stuck, right? And so they're focusing on problems, not solutions. What you focus on expands. And so when we focus on problems, what gets bigger? The problem, right? And it just grows and it grows and it grows. But if we focus on solutions, what gets bigger? Possibility, right? And things that could happen, things that could work out, new things that we can try. Complaining takes focus off of me and places on something or someone else. That's what it does, right? So we complain, and the last one is we compare. We compare our life with somebody else's. We compare our stuff with somebody else's. We compare our church with another church, our company with another company, my role within my company versus somebody else's role in another company. Now, here's the deal. Any and all those, none of those will help us move forward. None of those will help us deal with the challenges that are in front of us. Not one of them. All it does is it gets us stuck, and it magnifies the challenge that's in front of us to become insurmountable. This is what the nation of Israel was focused on. This was their mindset. It's everything God told us, except they're bigger, they're stronger, their cities have walls, there's giants. I mean, they just made their list. And that's what they focused on. And as long as they focused on, that's what got bigger. And what got bigger and bigger was, we cannot do this. And you think about Romans, right? You think about Romans. Part of it is theology. The other part is how to live it out. This is how to live it out. Listen, we can't afford to be stuck. We can't afford to be stuck as employees, as spouses, as family members, and we certainly can't afford to be stuck as Christ followers or a community of faith, the church. Paul knew that. We cannot be stuck. We have to move forward. We cannot look at the challenges in our lives as being so big that there's no hope. It's interesting. One of the greatest things the Bible offers is hope. And yet when we listen to some people around us, me included, it's almost as if there is no hope. And we have this wrestling match that goes on inside our head and inside of our soul, our spirit. So they compare. So some of you guys know this, but my son did an Ironman triathlon, and it really inspired me to do one. And so for those of you that don't know, it's a 2.4-mile swim, it's a 112-mile bike ride, and it's a 26.2-mile marathon, all done in 17 hours or less. I prefer the 17 hours myself. But here's the deal. My son did it, and I wanted to do it for like 11 years. Never shared that with anybody because I didn't believe that I could, but I really wanted to. And so So after Levi did it, I was talking to him. I said, man, I said, bud, that was so awesome what you did. That was so inspiring. And I happened to say, by accident, yeah, I've always wanted to do that. It was so cool. Right? And I'm talking. He goes, hold it, Dad. What'd you say? And I said, what? That was so cool. He goes, no, before that. I said, yeah, I've always wanted to do that. He said, really? You've always wanted? I said, yeah. I mean, ever since we've come down, I thought that would be really cool. But, you know, I could never do it. And he looked at me and said, Dad, what do you mean you could never? And what's my mindset? Right? What's my mindset? Can't do it. And he says, hold it, Dad. Why can't you do it? I mean, my son played the role of my coach. It was awesome, but not awesome at the same time. And he said, Dad, why can't you do it? And I said, well, you know, I don't swim. I could never swim. In fact, most people, when they think about doing an Ironman, swimming is the number one reason why they don't want to do it. And that's what I said. I said, I could never swim. And he said, Dad, you could if you started. Now, I couldn't argue with him because a year ago, he didn't swim. Not at all. So I'm looking at him. He says, Dad, you could if you started. And I thought, well, I can't argue with that because he did it. So I thought, okay, well, yeah, but I have bad knees and I can't run. He says, well, Dad, here's the deal. You know, if you learn to swim, which you can, and you're already riding your bike, and so you're going to lose weight, and then you can just walk the marathon, and you can walk it in enough time to make it in the 17 hours. So here's what he did, okay? So number one of the things that I do for a living is I'm a coach and I'm a trainer. And I ask these kinds of questions to other people, right? But he's asking to me, so what he was doing is he was taking all of my excuses off the table, and then he just said this. He said, Dad, so do you want to do it or not? And he made it that simple. Now, here's what I've realized. I've realized that there are people living with dreams and aspirations that because of doubt and disbelief and failure, past failures, they have pushed them down, deep down inside of them to where it's hardly even there until they say, you know, I've always thought of that. My son caught that. I've realized that. And he said, Dad, so do you want to do it or not? Now, did it matter to him what I said? Did it matter to him? No. Who did it matter to? Yeah, it mattered to me. And the truth is, when we stand at the threshold of something we desperately want to do, but fear and doubt prevent us from doing it. It doesn't matter to anybody else if you decide to go forward or not. It only matters to you. But my son loved me enough and wants me to live the kind of life that's inside of me to say, do you want to do it? And I just squirmed in my truck, and I looked at him and I said, yes. And I said, just like that, because I was kind of mad, you know, because when I said yes, what I was saying yes to was a lot of things that I couldn't answer. Like, I knew there was going to be a lot of pain in this. How much pain? I knew there was going to be a lot of time. I knew there was going to be a lot of fine. I just knew that my life was going to change for the next year. And I was saying yes to something that I didn't even know what it meant, but I knew that's what I wanted. And so I knew it was the right answer. And afterwards, my son said, okay, Dad, because if you want to do it, I'll do it with you. And I said, bud, you just gave a year of your life to do this, to train. And he said, no, Dad. He said, no, I'm doing it with you. I said, I'd never expect that. And he goes, I'm doing it. You're doing it. I'm doing it. We're doing it together. And a year from Dad today, you and I both, we're going to be Ironmen. And I said, okay. But we ain't telling Mom. So, and Nancy picked it up after a while. So we started training. And he was going to school in Kirkland, and I was living there, so we'd talk every day, either texting or Facebook or something like that, and encourage each other. And I remember one day he said, hey, Dad, how was your swim? And because we had the same training schedule. And I remember I said, not good. And he said, why not? Why wasn't it good? And I said, well, I got to the pool a little bit early, so I sat there, and I just looked at people, and I looked at all these really good swimmers, and they were fast, so I timed them. And I thought, man, they are fast. You know, they're like 19 seconds, one length of the pool, 20 seconds. And then I saw some really, really slow people. And I thought, well, let's time them. And it was like, wow, 35 seconds. I thought, they are slow. And then I got in and I swam and I timed myself. And I said, bud, I am slower than the slowest person here. And I'm not kidding. I was really discouraged. And this is what Levi said. Why does that matter? What does their speed have to do with your swim and your race? Why are you focused on them? Why are you doing that? Don't do that. Focus on your swim, focus on what you can do, and focus on where you need to go. That's all you need to focus on. And I thought, man, that's right. That is so right. I said, thank you. You know, Bud, thank you. So what was I? I was comparing, right? I was comparing. Theodore Roosevelt said, comparison is the thief of joy. It's the thief of joy. And what is joy for the Christian? Our strength. The joy of the Lord's our strength, right? And when we compare our lives, so we make excuses, you know, we complain, we blame others, we compare, all of a sudden we lose our joy, we live with frustration, the challenges magnify, we have this, I can't do it, it's too big, people like me don't get to do stuff like that. And so the very first thing, this is a two-part message, so the very first thing that we have to do is we have to own our circumstances if we're going to move forward through and be able to get through the pain, the disappointment, and the failures in our lives. The first thing we have to do is we got to own our circumstances. So no matter how old, no matter where you're at, the very first thing we have to take a look at is my life, my circumstances, my marriage, my relationship with my children, my finances, everything, my spirituality, my spiritual health, everything. I have to own where I am. I'm here because of me, the decisions I've made, the decisions I haven't made, the things I've done, the things I haven't done, and the way I've responded to the things that have been done to me. That's the first thing that I have to own. Very first thing, I've got to own my circumstances. When we do that, God begins to work. It's just like when we come to Christ. What's the very first thing I have to own? My sin. Nobody else's sin. Nobody else's life. Mine. And so when I own my circumstances, I get my eyes off of everybody else. I'm not making excuses. If I'm late, it's not because the guy in front of me drove. It's because I left too late. It's my fault. I remember, and this helps in the little things, right? I remember I was speaking to a group of physicians, and I like to look nice when I do stuff like that. I prefer not to look nice, but when I do that, I mean, just casual, but so anyways, Nancy has packed for me our whole marriage. I've never asked her to, but she's always done. I think she's a little afraid of what I might throw in the suitcase, actually, but so anyways, I had a suit on. I had a suit. I'm getting dressed the next day, and I have these old, not these, but look a little bit like these leather shoes, a little more beat up because they're my comfortable shoes, scuffed up. They don't look good. I've got a black suit, and I've got no dress shoes. And my first thought was, Nancy, come on. What am I doing? Blaming Nancy, right? So there's two things. Write this on your notes, right? Because I believe in this. Number one, recognize when you go there. Recognize your thoughts. Recognize the things you're saying. So I thought it. I actually even said it in my room. Nancy, come on. Right? And the moment I did that, I redirected it. I owned it. And I said, nope, it's not her fault. I had plenty of time to check my suitcase. I could have packed myself. I could have done all this stuff. And I didn't think about that being Nancy's problem at all. And that's just a little thing, but it's these little things in our lives that we just go, hey, it's, you know, that other person or my boss or whatever, we complain, we compare. It's those little things that pretty soon mount up to the big things and create these massive challenges. When you're a victim, you're stuck. And you don't stay stuck. I just want you to know you don't stay stuck. You go backwards. You don't stay there. You always go backwards unless you get unstuck. And the very first place to start to get unstuck is by just owning your circumstances. Where you're at, the things we experience, we got to own it. Not blame anybody, not make excuses, just own it. I didn't do it. I did or I didn't do it. Not why I did or didn't do it. Just I didn't. You know, when I was doing the Ironman, the first year I attempted, Levi and I, like I said, trained together, and race day was 107 degrees, which is hot. Nancy was getting texts, don't let Terry do this. He has nothing to prove. She didn't tell me that, and I'm glad, but there was a lot of people concerned. Does he know how old he is? Has he looked in the mirror? I mean, you know, I mean, just... And but I knew how hot it was going to be, and you know what? And I'm not going to say I wasn't concerned. I was, but I thought, you know what? If I get too hot, I'll just stop. So anyways, the day of, I made it through the swim, which was the one thing I thought I could never do. When I got out, I thought, man, that was a win for me right there. I made it through the swim in the Ironman, 2.4 miles. I was so excited, and I got on my bike, and it was really, really hot, and on my second 56-mile loop, it hit 107, 141 off the pavement, and I lost energy, never got it back, and at the 90-mile cutoff, they came out and they said, your race is over, you didn't make the cutoff, and you have to get off your bike, you're done. And we didn't prepare for that. We never talked about it. All we talked about is, tonight you're going to be an Ironman, Dad, and I'm going to put your medal around you. That's what we talked about. But it didn't happen. And I remember I was sitting in the air-conditioned van, I might add, to take me back to the city. I was really disappointed in my results, but I wasn't disappointed in my performance. I gave it everything I had. I went down, and Levi wanted to see me, and so it was halfway through the race and through the marathon, and he came around for the first time he saw me. He had heard that I was disqualified, but he hadn't seen me, and he just fell in my arms, and he just wept. I mean, he wept like a baby. And all he could say is, Dad, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And I said, Bud, don't be sorry. I said, I'm doing something I never thought I would ever do. I always thought this was too big, and for so long, I just said, no, I could never do it. But I said, you helped me. You allowed me to take this journey. You encouraged me, and I'm so grateful I did. The people we've met, the experiences that we've had. And I said, Bud, here's the deal. I'm done today, but I'm not finished. I'm going to finish someday. It's just not today. And I'll never forget that moment. And I was just so thankful that I even got to participate. I was so happy. It felt like it was that much beyond me that, you know, and so I did. So the next year I trained again, and this year, you know, Levi didn't do it. He was just there to encourage me. It wasn't as hot. It was only mid-90s, so not bad. And had the best swim of my life. 100 hour and 41 minutes was my swim time, which was almost a full 11 minutes off of the time before. So anyways, I went on to the bike, and it was really, really windy. Now, how many bike riders do we have here? Way back, okay, riding in wind. Talk to me about that. It's like a parachute, right? It's like you're pulling a parachute. And so I remember that morning, earlier in that morning, and this is how easy this works, you guys. Earlier that morning, first thing I did is I looked outside, I saw the wind, I texted my coach, and I said, man, have you seen the wind? And this is what he said, why are you focused on the wind? You know what? Here's the deal. These are the kinds of people that you want in your life. I'm serious. This guy, I mean, he wanted me to finish, and he knew that if I focused on the wind, what was going to get bigger? The wind. But man, there was a lot of wind. So I said, okay. So he goes, why are you focused on wind? I said, nope, not anymore. We know what we focused on? How I was going to ride that day. See, we got to focus on what we can do, right? Not on the obstacle. How are we going to, you know, how are we going to come against the challenge? What can we do, right? And so I did that. So out there, I was riding, and it was windy, and I'm telling you, I had to ride exactly as we talked about that morning. When I came through town after my first loop, I was 15 minutes behind where I needed to be. And my family was all excited because they knew that I'd come through. So they thought, hey, good for him. He's halfway done. But Levi, knowing the ride and the event, looked at his clock and said, no, this isn't good. Dad's behind. This is not good, you guys. So he got on a little moped, and he rode with me for 56 miles. And he was just yelling at me, Dad, put your head down. Dad, get in your arrows. Dad, you only got this many minutes to get up there. And he was like, Dad, you got to set a personal record going up this hill. I mean, he was relentless. I mean, I was going up the hill, one hill, and I go, Bud, I've got a cramp. He goes, you don't have time to cramp. Ride through it. Don't slow down. I mean, Boom, boom, boom. But you know what? Here's the deal. I loved it because my natural tendency would be cramping, slow down a little bit. But he just said, Dad, if you're not going to do it if you slow down. Don't, you know, ride through it. I'm so glad he was there. He did that for 56 miles, got off, started the run. A lot of people don't know this, but I fell in my first loop of the bike right on my knee, took all the weight on my knee. And it didn't hurt during the bike because it's no impact. But when I got on the run, I knew I was going to feel it. And so I couldn't run the first loop. I walked as fast as I could, did a little power walk. Looked pretty awesome. But and then I took 12 ibuprofen. So when I came through the first loop, Levi comes up and he's encouraging me, going, Dad, that was awesome, but you got to go faster, you know. And he's just pushing me. Well, he was in his flip-flops and a hat and shorts, and he's running next to me, just encouraging me, and he did that for 14 miles. And he just said, Dad, you can do it. And I said, Bud, my knee's hurting again. He said, Dad, at the end of this, you know, tomorrow, you're going to hurt, whether you're an Iron Man or not. How do you want to hurt? That's what he said. How do you want to hurt, Dad? How do you want to be in pain tomorrow? Gosh. I loved it. I did. I thought, come on, talk to me. And he just did that. I had another friend, Dave Miller. He ran with me for 18 miles. Dave was in a coma, had a fracture in a co-ed soccer tournament, took a knee in his head, fractured his skull in 21 places, was in a coma for 12 days, didn't think he would live. Then they realized he was going to live. Then they said he would have diminished capacities, didn't know if he would walk or anything. Had to learn to walk, had to learn to talk, had to learn to do everything. And 4 years later, after getting out of rehab, he was an Iron Man. And now Dave's with me. And he's going with me. He's like, come on, Gern, come on. He goes, Gern, how does it feel to be to accomplish the greatest physical feat at your age? And I said, oh, it's going to be awesome. He goes, well, it's not going to happen if you don't hurry up, right? Oh, man, they were just pushing me and pushing me. Mile 24, Levi is no longer with me. They took him to the... They took him to the finish line because they wanted him to put my medal around me, but they waited until I made the last cutoff because I made every cutoff by like either a minute or less. It was that close. So when I made the final cutoff, they took Levi and Dave ran with me, and then I do a run-walk. I learned that from Pastor Dave, run-walk. And I got to mile 24, and Dave goes, you can't walk anymore. You can't. You'll never make it. And so I said, and my first thought was, I can't run that far. And I recognized that, and I immediately thought, but what can I do? I can run as long as I can, as far as I can. And that's what I'm going to focus on. And that's what I did. And I ran the entire last 2.2 miles. And I'm going through. And Dave says, before the race started, Miller goes, hey, when you get through the finisher's chute, take your time, don't rush through it, high five people, hug them, everyone's going to want to do that. Well, now, at the end of the race, he's going, Gurno, don't see anybody, don't touch anybody, don't let anybody, you got no time to hug anybody, right? You don't have any time to enjoy this, right? And it was that close. And so when I turned down Sherman and I saw the finish line, the clock was out, and I thought, oh my gosh, what does that mean? Does that mean the race is over and I'm disqualified? What does that mean? Does that mean I'm going to be the guy that comes through and they go, hey, nice effort, we'll see you next year? You know, and that's what I'm thinking, and I just kept going. And what I didn't say, and I'm going to read my last scripture here in just a minute, but what I didn't say was the paper did an article on me about trying to do it last year and not finishing, and so coming back for redemption, and the title of the big in the paper, Unfinished Business, right? Well, they had me speak at opening ceremonies after reading the article, and so everybody called me, hey, you're Unfinished Business, right? That was my name. How would you like to have that title, right? Hey, almost, how you doing? Hey, not quite, how's it going today, right? And so I'm Mr. Unfinished Business, right? So I come down, and all of a sudden I hear, Mr. Unfinished Business is about ready to finish the business, you know? And then all of a sudden I heard those, Terry Gurno, you are an Iron Man. And I ran, yeah, it was awesome. And I ran across the finish line. I fell into my son's arms. My son just cried, and he held me up. I had nothing left. And then he put his medal around my neck, and it was one of those moments I'll never forget. And And I didn't know this, but the announcer sent somebody over to the official timetable, and he said, hey, go find out if he's official. Find out if he made it, because they didn't even know. And I didn't know they did that. And finally, a guy came up to me and said, have you been told? And I said, no. Told what? He goes, we had to check your time. And he said, you made it. You're an Iron Man. Within, I had a minute 56 to spare. Now, here's what I want to say. To me, there was not a better illustration for life than that, and for the faith and the race that God has called us to. When I crossed the finish line, I fell into my son's arms with nothing left. And you know what? That's how I want to go out of this life into the next. And I want to have nothing left. I want to give all the love, all the compassion, all of the ideas, all the encouragement. I want to give everything that I have. I want to reserve one drop. I don't want to blame anybody. I don't want to compare my life or my circumstances or my marriage. I don't want to complain. I don't want to compare. I don't want to blame. I don't want to do anything. It's my life. This is where I'm at, and I got here because of me. And God, help me as I give my life to you to take another step forward. Galatians 6, 4 through 5 says, pay careful attention to your own work, for then you will get the satisfaction of a job well done. And you won't need to compare yourself to anyone else, for we are each responsible for our own conduct. I love that. We don't have to worry about anybody else. We don't have to get caught up in anything else. We can just say, God, help me run this race that you've called me to do, to live my life the way that you want me to live it, to use the gifts and talents that you've given me. Help me. I wrote a book. The first thing I talk about is the 12 or the 10 leadership lessons, painful leadership lessons I've learned. Because I had a leadership role that didn't end up very good, and it was painful. And I never wanted to lead again. Unfortunately, I was leading a church. You know what I realized? I realized that I didn't know how hurtful Christian people could be. When I resigned, I didn't know what I was going to do. I just knew what I wasn't going to do, and I wasn't going to be a part of that any longer. And I blamed a lot of people for how I felt and where I was. And even though in Austin, Texas, I was at a business training, it had a spiritual meaning. Because I realized that I had been a victim. One of the most painful times of my life, I had blamed, I had made excuses, and I didn't realize it until that moment that I was stuck. I thought I was moving forward, and I wasn't. And in that moment, I said, God, help me to never be a victim again, ever. I didn't know I was. I was ashamed of it. And God, help me never to go down that road again. I prayed that prayer. And it was like 10,000 pounds of weight came off my shoulder. I didn't know I was carrying that around until that moment. It happens. We all have a story. Pain, disappointment, failure, it's a part of it. But if we're going to move beyond that and help others, the first thing we got to do is own it. That's why the Bible says that we have to confess our sin. And so I want to pray that prayer with you before I leave. For 28 years, I wanted to write a book, but because of those, my learning disabilities and the things I heard from teachers and friends in school, I believed I was dumb and I couldn't write. And so for 25 of those years, I tried and I would throw it away. And I would, in fact, I started in Kent Christian Center. And when I first started, I'd throw it away. And then someone said, you know, Terry, about 3 years ago, don't say that. I was being a victim. I already done this talk. I was still doing it, right? Because we all can. And that's why we need people in our lives that love us and won't let us do that. And they'll just in a loving way say, don't go there. Is that what you want to be? And that's what this guy did. He said, don't say that, because you are a communicator. You are. So if you want to write a book, write a book, and don't make any more excuses. And I tell you what, it didn't make it easy. In fact, this was much harder than an Iron Man, because it was all emotional. But I got it done. And whatever it is, wherever you're at, God wants to move us forward. And we've got to begin where we are with who we are, whatever that may mean. So, Father, thank you so much for your love, for your mercy, for loving us, for taking care of us, for never giving up on us. God, your word is filled with encouragement, practical living principles for us to not just to know as information, but to apply so our lives will be transformed, every area of our lives. Do the things, God, that you've put in our hearts to do, whatever that may be. And so, Father, I pray for everybody here this morning that you'll meet us right where we're at, right where we're at. And if you're here this morning, I want to include you in this prayer that maybe you feel like, you know what, I've been a victim. I've made excuses. I've done exactly what you've said. I don't like it, but I've just realized that. I didn't even realize it before. I realize it now. And you want me to include you in that prayer, just slip your hand up and I'll pray for you. Yep, thanks, thanks, thank you, thank you. It's an easy thing to do. Thank you so much for your honesty. Father, thank you for your love and your mercy. You love us so much, you don't leave us where we're at. So God, I just pray that right now, all of us, we own our life, our circumstances, every part of it. We don't blame, we don't make excuses, we're not gonna compare, we're not gonna complain. But God, we ask you to meet us right where we're at and lead us where you want us to go, to use the gifts and the abilities that you've given us to make a difference in this world, beginning with where I am and the people I know. Father, we love you so much. We thank you for your love and grace. In Jesus' name, amen.